You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolensky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. This is the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Syntax is five letters.
S-Y-N-T-A.
Oh, okay. You know what? That's six letters. Okay.
Wes, come on. You made the logo and the logo's symmetrical.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Okay. Anyways, why are we talking about five letters? Because today we have a guest on the show. We've got Josh Wardle of Wardle, the hit game. If you've been living under a rock for the last month, or I don't have any sure, we'll talk about that as part of the podcast. Josh created the hugely popular Wordle game. And just out of nowhere, Josh sent me an email. I said, "Hey, I listened to the podcast. I made Wordle." And I was like, "Oh, that thing." And he's like, "I'm surprised you sent an email back." And I said, "I'm glad you emailed, because I had blocked the word on Twitter when it started blowing up."
Oh, I did too. Yeah.
I was like, "What are these boxes everyone is posting?" And I was like, "This is annoying." And I put it in there. And then I went to visit my parents, and my dad goes, "Hey, have you been playing Wordle?" And I said, "No, like that, I is that what those boxes are that everyone says?" He's like, "Yeah, it's amazing." I was like, "All right, I'll try it out." I was like, "This is really fun. And I'm addicted. My whole family is playing it." And my dad was like, "That's amazing that this guy sends you an email, because he obviously is a very busy guy right now."
Yeah.
So welcome. So, Josh.
You know, Wes, my wife did the same thing. She was like, "Have you heard of Wordle?" And I was like, "Yeah, Josh is coming on the podcast like tomorrow." She's like, what? Yeah, it's everywhere. Yeah.
This is like a legitimizer moment for me to the rest of the world. Cause like most people are like, "Yeah, you just dick around on the computer all day." But now people understand what it is we do, right?
Make Wordle.
So, welcome, Josh. Thanks for coming on.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. Even though you were both confided in me that you blocked Wordle on Twitter, I'm still very happy to be here.
I only blocked it not because I didn't want to play it, because I did play it, but only because the green boxes were filling my timeline.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we can get into that. There's some really interesting stuff going on there that's like, you know, I made a bunch of decisions when making the game kind of around trying to do the opposite of what games normally do, but bizarrely, the green boxes, I think if you were to look at it, they might be considered spammy in some regards, but we can get into that stuff.
It's interesting. Yeah, there's a lot there.
People are so interested in that. Like, we can get into your history and all that in a sec, but like, let's talk about it. Like, why did this blow up? Are the green boxes part of it? What do you think about that? And then we'll obviously get into the tech behind it as well.
So I think, firstly, I think the green boxes did play a large part in, Wordle getting big. So it got a shout out. There's a technologist, Andy Bio, who he found out about it and shared on a blog, and he gets a lot of readers. And then it got picked up by a New York Times newsletter. And this was before that emoji grid, the sharing function that we're referring to, existed. But off the back of that, it got popular for some reason that I still don't understand in New Zealand. And I'm told that the Twitterverse in New Zealand is quite interconnected. It's fairly small population-wise, so people tend to follow one another. So it's a really good place for something to go viral, essentially. And one of the players there, at that point, when you wanted to share how you'd done, you would just say, like, Wordle in 3 or something. Mm. And one of the players there, who I don't know, a woman called Elizabeth S., she came up with the idea of typing out her results as an emoji grid. And the emoji grid is a way of sharing how you did in the game, but without spoiling it for others. You know, it's Wordle is a word game. There's one puzzle a day, and it's the same puzzle for everyone. So if you tell someone the solution, you ruin it and they can't play it. And so she invented this way of sharing. You kind of share your story, the journey you took to get to the answer. Yeah. And then I saw other people started to do that as well. And they were spending the time like opening up the emoji keyboard, like typing it out. And I was like, I've got the game state. I can just
plop it into emoji. Yeah.
And that was it was getting big at that point. But then I think that was like the catalyst that allowed it to really spread in the way it has done.
Like, when did it get popular? Because in my world, I had just heard about it, like, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks ago it started popping up. Like, what's the timeline to when you release this thing to today, which is, we should tell our users, like, you ended up selling the whole thing to New York Times. Congratulations. That's amazing.
Congrats.
Thank you. Yeah, so, I mean, it's weird, right? It's a website. And this is another thing. There's no app. There's nothing. It is apart from my personal domain, which is completely impossible to memorize. So you have to Google Wordle every day, which is, like, another one of the things that is, like, a bit counterintuitive. But, yeah, so when does a website launch? Like, when does a game... It's, like, the website's been available since, like, January of last year. My partner and I made the game for my partner, actually, is the story. She really enjoys word games. New York Times has a game called Spelling Bee. It's very popular. It's, like, and we do the crossword together. So I was trying to make a game that she would enjoy. And so she and I have been playing since January last year. I introduced my... I kind of made it more public in, like, June, when I introduced my family and some friends to it. And then it really started taking off in, like, October. And then November was when the all this stuff happened and I introduced the share grid. And so it's literally been over the last, I think I said at the beginning of November, beginning of November, there were maybe 90 people who played, 9-0 were playing a day. And, like, yesterday, there are a lot more than that.
You tell us how many?
I'm a little cagey about that, but it's more than 10 million people a day playing at the moment.
That's wild.
That's so wild. And I love stories like this because developers are creative people. We love to poke around, and I love seeing, we can talk about what your background is next, but I just love hearing stories of people who are just out to build stuff for fun and just, like, obviously for your partner, right? And then before you know it, the thing explodes and gets extremely popular. And I honestly think that's how you sort of strike on a lot of these hits, is just by, like, I don't know, like what is your background? Like, maybe we should go down that. It's like, what's your background? Are you a coder? Why do you listen to this podcast? How did you build the thing? Let's get into that.
Yeah, so my background is actually in art. Like, I did a fine art degree. I'm from the UK originally. I live in the US now. But yeah, I did a master's in art at the University of Oregon. And then due to some visa... So the way visas work in the US, I had to get a job related to my field of study. And I'd done digital art. I figured, and I was in Oregon, I figured either Seattle or San Francisco seemed like good places to get a job. I ended up choosing San Francisco. And very randomly, I saw a posting on Reddit looking for a part-time artist. And I was using Reddit a lot that time. This was in, like, 2012. So I responded, and I ended up getting this really random job at Reddit. And this was when Reddit was like 15 people, 12, 15 people, like that. It was tiny. But, like, it was already had, you know, massive amounts of traffic. And so I was doing this kind of weird stuff. I had no technical background. Like, I played around with stuff a little. And through Reddit, I was exposed to a lot of, like, technical stuff. And I ended up becoming what's called in Silicon Valley as a product manager. You kind of sit between developers often have very, they're very skeptical.
Yeah, you're the person that makes us sit in meetings all day, right?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so product managers kind of sits between, like, design, business, and engineering. And then you're also charged with, like, you know, you have to come up at tech companies in Silicon Valley. You're, like, they're often described as, like, a mini CEO. Like, they give you one area of the product and you are responsible for making all the decisions around that, as long as they're in line with the company. So I ended up kind of in that position at Reddit. And I did that for a long time and I got the opportunity there. I did some, Reddit does these big April Fool's Day projects.
Yeah.
I had a few of those that were incredibly, that did really, really well. One was called The Button and one was called Place, which was, like, this large collaborative canvas. And those projects were amazing to do. They're, like, these creative, they're more like social experiments, exploring the way that, like, people interact online and, like, trying to kind of playfully explore some of the, like, heinous issues that we have online at the moment.
And also super viral too. Like, I mean, everybody shares those things like crazy, especially the play. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I had I was getting pretty burnt out. I've been at Reddit for a long, like 6 years at that point as a product manager. I was pretty burnt out. And the part of being a product manager that I always enjoyed the most actually was conversations with engineers. I really liked talking about how they were going to do something, the technical details. And like when you're working in a really cross-functional role like that, having an understanding of how things are done technically is really useful. And it gives you credibility when chatting with engineers, right? Like I'm sure we've all had experiences where you're chatting with someone and they have the best of intentions, but you can tell that they don't really understand. You can't communicate about the technical stuff. And it's not through any fault of their own, but it just makes conversations hard. Whereas if you have a conversation with someone like that who isn't a developer but does have a technical understanding, I think it can just make the whole process go so much better.
The best, like when I worked at a boot camp, we had a lot of like project managers come in and they're like, I'm not looking to become a dev here. I just like, I need to be able to talk the talk and understand like what these little computer gremlins are doing.
So then I left Reddit. I went to a boot camp, in fact, in San Francisco, like front end focused. It's called Hack Reactor. And then after that, I got a job at Pinterest as a front-end developer, as a software engineer. Then recently went back to Reddit, also as an engineer this time. Mm. And then recently, and then I created Wordle. And then I've recently left Reddit. And now I work for like this art collective in Brooklyn. That's pretty wild.
Wow. So, yeah, you've been everywhere.
That is my life story. Yeah, there's no more to know.
You've probably written lines of code that like most of the world has laid eyes on, which is some of the biggest websites ever.
Well, that would be amazing to trace. It's like, how many lines of code have you written that what percentage of the population has seen? I bet it's outrageous. Yeah.
Well, and here's a secret. The lines of code are probably terrible.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm making this stuff up as I go. And that was actually a really big part of doing Wordle. So like working at Pinterest, like going through a boot camp and working at Pinterest and Reddit, like there are some really, really smart people at those companies, way smarter than me, way better developers. And I got to work in the frameworks that they had set up. Like really smart people had thought about the difficult problems with front-end development and made like tools or component libraries. And I was just kind of, it was like playing with Lego that someone else had built. And so it was really easy to develop front-end stuff, but it actually kept me away from a lot of the things I think. Basically, when I build Wordle myself, I had to solve a bunch of problems that previously had been solved for me, but I didn't even know that they had been solved for me because it was all like a magic black box. So
somebody else smarter than you had taken care of
exactly.
them already. We often say that about like frameworks and even TypeScript and stuff like that. It's like we're just like most of us developers listening to this podcast, we're just like users at the end of the day. We're just using these big libraries and frameworks that somebody else has built, and they've jumped through a lot of hoops in order to make it easy for us to use at the end of the day.
Yeah, and that's actually most of my experience up until like I started learning front-end development basically in 2018, started with React. And I think I'm sure you two both have had much longer careers with front-end development, and maybe some jQuery days, maybe some days before that. But it's interesting to me that like React, I think it's a great developer experience. I love using it as a developer, but I think it kind of hid a lot of what was going on to me. I learned React basically. I didn't have a good understanding of the DOM or like vanilla JavaScript. And so one of the things I wanted to do with Wordle was try not to use a framework like that. And that's been remarkable in teaching me things in terms of becoming a better engineer, like just writing vanilla JavaScript and using regular HTML elements and styling and stuff like that has taught me so much. And I think it's great that people use React. I think it's amazing. But from my experience, having this shifting and just writing HTML, CSS, and JavaScript was a really eye-opening experience.
Oh, man. I'm so glad you say that. Because like Scott and I say that all the time. Like, you have to know how these things work. And like, when I learned JavaScript, I went straight into jQuery, and then I had to sort of backpedal over years to actually learn the like regular JavaScript. And you see that a lot now is people just jump straight into React, which it's not bad. Like, certainly you have to just get building stuff as well, but there's something so beautiful about being able to use just the underlying tech to build something as complicated as like a game like this.
And sometimes it's easier too than you might have expected, and sometimes it's harder. But like, for instance, I just recorded a video yesterday, Wes, and it was like, you don't need a dependency for, and the video was the clipboard API. And I was looking, and there's a React clipboard API hook that has 700,000 weekly downloads or something. And I'm just thinking, what? In fact, it's more lines of code to import and use that hook than it is to just use navigator.clipboard.writeText. And it's just like, why? Why is anybody doing this? And if you look at the package, it's only 100 lines of code or whatever. And it's mostly just to check if you have IE11. And that is the barrier there. It's like, you're not learning the DOM. You're learning, I mean, these browser APIs are amazing. There's so many cool things you can do with them. And it is funny the lengths that people go to not learn that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Wes's earlier point is really interesting in that regard, right? Like, I think most people do this stuff because they want to achieve something, right? Like, you have a goal, you have an app idea, or you just need that thing copied to clipboard. And for a lot of time, I think it's great just to like focus on building the thing and getting it done.
Yeah,
but as you get a bit further on, being able to ask, well, be curious about like, well, how does that work?
Totally.
And like explore that stuff. And I think, yeah, it's very interesting. You mentioned that like Wordle has two external dependencies that ship to the client. And one of them is a clipboard polyfill.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Copy to clipboard polyfill that actually broke things for me. Or like, you know, I think it's like DuckDuckGo doesn't like, or something like one of the more privacy focused browsers. But even then I was trying to do the thing myself and it was working pretty well. And then I was like, I'm going to go to the experts on this, downloaded a polyfill, but actually it's just someone doing a similar thing to me, but they're handling different cases. And so it made it better for some people, but made it worse for other people, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. Hey, let's actually take a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors before we go any further. One of our sponsors today is Sentry at sentry.io. And now I would imagine if you're writing a project that is going to be used by tens of millions of people, that you probably want some way to track your errors and exceptions, because maybe
if the clipboard API breaks.
Exactly.
The entire thing.
Yeah, you have a bug in your polyfill or clipboard API that breaks something. You're probably going to want to figure that out. So, sentry.io, sentry.io, is the perfect place to track all of your errors and exceptions. If you use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word, you'll get 2 months for free. And again, this is a really cool service because it tracks your errors and exceptions, puts them in a big table, a big database where you can say, oh, I fixed this. Oh, this thing broke again. Oopsies. This is tied to this release. This is tied to this specific user. And it's a really great way to stay organized when you have a big project that potentially has a lot of bugs. Because let's face it, nobody writes code without bugs. That's just how it works. So thanks so much for Sentry for sponsoring Sentry.io. Coupon code TASTYTREAT and you'll get 2 months for free.
All right. Let's talk about the actual tech stack of, because I asked on Twitter, like, what do you want to talk about when the Wordle guy comes on the podcast? And so many people were amazed, like, because everybody's viewing source and like, it's amazing. If you open up the network tab, it's just like, it loads like three requests to load the entire game, and there's no XHR requests, and it doesn't seem like there's any back end. So like what's the stack for this wildly popular game? It seems like most people would go out and get venture capital funding for something like this, and you just built it in just JavaScript. How does it work?
Yeah, great question. So, right, like to go back to the original point, I was building a game for my partner, so it didn't have to be. I could just build a client side app for this. Right, it's a guessing game. So, people enter words, and there's a hidden word each day. So, just there's some validation. Questions, I need to select a winning word each day, and I need to validate, is the thing you're entering actually a word? I think if you were building a proper game, for want of a better word, you would use a backend for those things. I didn't have to worry about that because I was just building a game for my partner and I. It was never meant to go viral. So I just shoved everything on the client. So it uses web components, which was fairly new to me. Web components are actually, it's like a native browser spec, I guess you would call it. It's combined of three things: custom elements, the shadow DOM, which is a method of encapsulating CSS, and then HTML templates. And the best way I've actually heard to describe it is if you think about something like the select element, which you nest option elements inside of, and it renders a dropdown for you. Clearly, there's some magic going on there, right? When you combine these elements, these HTML elements, something, there's some JavaScript running somewhere, but you as a developer, you kind of don't know about that. That's kind of how I think, and this may be incorrect, like I'm very new to web components, but that's how I conceptually model web components in my head. It's a way of writing components that are kind of look like native elements, right? But they can have this magic that's kind of hidden from you and happens in the background.
Totally. Like I'm just viewing source on it, and you've got a game app tag.
I love that. I'm sorry, Wes. When the I'm viewing source, that's hilarious.
No way. People on Twitter were saying Scott's gonna HTML elements. No, but like you made your own HTML elements. That's what web components are. You have an app component or an app element, a theme component. Each row has its own web component, and then every tile has its own web component. I'm assuming the keyboard is its own component, and this is just like a great use case for, like, Scott and I were always saying, like, why don't we see like more stuff being built in web components? And here we are seeing a really nice game being built in it.
And one thing, so this was the first project I built with, and I'm using, there are like frameworks that wrap around web components that make them a bit more comparable to something like React. So I think Lit Element, which is one made by Google, is very, very popular. And what I'm using is kind of the thing that Lit wraps around, so the native web component API, which means, you know, if you've ever built a project for the first time using a new technology, I'm doing a bunch of things incorrectly, like React's approach to like state and props and lifting state up and concepts like that, I found so useful when I was learning as a developer. It's like really opinionated and it tells you how it wants to be used. Kind of with web components, because it is essentially I'm just using native, you know, web APIs, it's kind of up to you, and you can have like listeners anywhere and like events firing. And throughout the app, throughout Wordle, I actually use multiple different ways of kind of achieving the same thing. And it's me exploring which one of these, like what works and what doesn't work. And again, if you're building an app to go viral, that probably isn't the approach you want to do. You probably want to use a technology you're really comfortable with. But that's kind of just the way this thing panned out.
So how did you find working with web components close to the metal here? Because I did a course on it, and you know what, my experience with web components was largely that there's a lot of different ways to do things in web components. Did you have like, would you reach for web components again, given the opportunity? Would you reach for maybe a wrapper library like Lit, or I think Stencil maybe is one of them, or would you go straight to the metal again?
I think that's a really good question. And as I mentioned earlier, for me, using vanilla web components was really valuable this period in my career, because it taught me a lot. Like I had to learn a lot about how, like the basic, like the DOM, web APIs,
copying
stuff like
the template, creating the elements, attaching event listeners.
Exactly. And I think there's a certain degree of like muscle memory and repetition that's actually valuable to like figure out how these work. That said, just something that's so easy as like getting the component to update when an attribute changes, is there's quite a lot of boilerplate that you have to do each time. And I think wrappers like Lit, you know, make that stuff way easier to do. And to your point, if I was going to build another project, I think I would think a lot about the complexity of it. Like Wordle is pretty simple at the end of the day. Yeah. So something that size is good. If I, you know, I think if it was to get much more complicated, I might consider, you know, trying to learn Lit or something like that. But having a fundamental understanding, I think is really, really strong, as we talked about.
Yeah. And you're not shipping. I mean, you're not shipping a ton of code for it. It's not like, I mean, how big is React? How big is... I don't actually know anything about the size of Lit or if what it's adding onto your project, if anything. But this allows you to, you know, really deal directly with DOM APIs.
Yeah, I checked before we started chatting. So non-gzipped Wordle is like 250 kilobytes. Gzipped, it's about 60. And then almost half of that weight is just the word list. I'm not doing any fancy compression. I'm sure there's ways that I could like use some smart algorithm to, you know, compress that further. And then bizarrely, I mentioned I have two external dependencies. One is that the polyfill. The other one is I had to do an object merge, and I'm like I know I'm going to mess that up. So I'm using Lodash. And that's accounting for almost 20% of the... So the word list is 50%. Lodash is 20%. And then only like 30% of the bundle is the actual web components JavaScript, which is remarkable. And again, if I was smarter, this was my first project using Rollup, which was really good. I like JavaScript build systems.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Absolutely detestable. And Rollup have been recommended to me as one of the ones that like kind of makes, it's not Webpack, it's a bit more straightforward. I do wonder if I was a bit smarter or could spend a bit longer, I could get the, I'm not sure exactly if Lodash is being, because I'm only using one function, object merge, maybe there's some tree shaking stuff, but, or maybe I should just write, and maybe I should suck it up and write my own object merge function. I don't know.
So people that are, this happens all the time. You can install each Lodash function on its own, which I'm pretty sure you're doing looking at the size of your...
Yeah, I am. It's just remarkable to me how much comes with that one function. And obviously, this is because these things are actually quite complicated. And I just want to, like, install it and forget it. But
We've talked about this on the podcast before. There's a package from Angus Kroll called Just. Mm-hmm. And he has every single one is no dependencies. And there is Just-Merge. Oh. I wonder how big it is. I'm going to look it up right now. Index.js.
Just-Merge is tiny. I mean, they're all tiny. They're like bytes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's 21 lines of code for Just-Merge. So you could probably... Yeah. But like, it's not like... It's not like you're hard up, right? Like 58K
you're shipping nothing,
already. Gzip turned on,
yeah.
And also let's talk about that Gzip. You said, oh, I'm sure there's an algorithm that could make the word list smaller, but like that's what Gzip does. It takes like if you have the letter H 1,000 times, it doesn't have to send that H 1,000 times over the wire. It just does it once, and I don't know. It's smart enough to. Inflated again.
I mentioned that because I saw like a computer science person on Twitter being like, hey, he could have done this better. And so I just assumed, I assumed that was correct. It is interesting though, like at this, you know, part of what has allowed Wordle, and we kind of touched on this earlier, allowed it to go viral is that there's no back end, right? Like if I was trying to scale a back end at the same time, it would be maddening, I think. Even getting the front end set up like this. Originally, it was hosted on my like shared hosting that I bought in college that had like a 50 gigabyte bandwidth limit, but I never used more than previously like 20 megabytes a month or anything.
Oh my goodness!
And then I started, you know, tearing through it. So fortunately, through working at Reddit, I got to meet some of my friends are incredibly smart people. So I worked with one of them to. Set up Cloudflare, put Cloudflare in front of it because it's all static assets. Most of it can be cached. And then that like, you know, cut things down, you know, like 99% of requests are getting served by Cloudflare. But even at the volume of traffic for Wordle, I was going to overflow the 50 gigabyte monthly limit. So then we migrated it to AWS S3. And there are a bunch of optimizations you could do there, right? We've talked a little bit about reducing the bundle size. Another one would be, I think, because the assets don't change very often, I could increase the time to live on the caching would be another approach. All in all, these were no longer my problem, actually. The New York Times can figure out.
I'm sure they can handle it.
Yeah.
Like, how wild is it, like, when you get to the scale that you're looking at a 200K website and you're literally worried about cost, you know? Like, that's how large some of these things are. Like, I remember... forget who it was. I talked to somebody who like sent out millions and millions and millions of emails, and they said for every letter they put in the email, it was like a gig of bandwidth that was being sent.
That's amazing.
Like, oh wow! Like you accidentally put an exclamation mark. Like you want to? Do you really like? Let's say you're getting 10 cents per gig or something like that. Do you really want to spend 50 cents on an exclamation mark? Yeah.
This is such a good lesson, though, for people who feel like things need to be overly engineered or overly complicated to have something that is good that people use. Is like you can make something that is this. I don't know, viral or incredible or fun or any of these things that Wordle is. With just absolutely shipping nothing while still having it be primarily a JavaScript-based app. I mean, it's really wild.
Are you able to tell us how much it did cost you to host it? I'm always curious.
I think my AWS bill is going to be a little over $100 for January. And January has been a bumper month.
Sure. I pay more than that for some small... That's amazing. Yeah. And then people are wondering, like, well, how does it remember my streak? You know, like, I don't have an account.
Yeah.
So, what's that using? I'll let you go into it.
Yeah, so that's using the local storage. One of the big things I was keen on with Wordle is not to do a bunch of the things that you're meant to do if your goal is to grow something or make it go viral. Yeah. So there's no login. Like, I don't ask you to create an account. I don't collect any personal information. A byproduct of that is that I'm local storage is per browser, essentially, per device, per browser. So it kind of ties you in a little bit. It ties the player in. They have to, if they want their streak to be maintained, they have to play on the same device each day, which from a user experience perspective is not ideal. But again, in terms of technical complexity, right? If I'm then thinking about logins and then I'm thinking about managing people's data, like I don't want to do that. And like for a simple game like this, it's like so low stakes. Keeping it free and simple was a really big part of my goal. So not having ads on it is also a big part of that.
Yeah, I mean, think about that aspect. You have user accounts and suddenly you have a database. You have 10 million users or whatever. You have 10 million records of user data now that you're having to worry about sharding and scaling your database and all of that. Like that sounds like a total nightmare and a huge cost. I mean, yeah, tremendous
and then
cost.
Also, a responsibility in terms of people's personal data, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like that you mentioned earlier, like just building something can go viral, even if it's just fun, even if it is the tech stack isn't, you know, amazingly complicated.
Yeah, I unfortunately was digging around for this podcast and I found the word of the day in local storage.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a bit bummed because like every day my wife and I do it after the kids go to bed.
Sorry.
And
oh, of course, Wes has got to ruin the game for himself. Gotta poke around.
This is one of the things, knowing what I know now, this is a really common piece of feedback. One is that all the words in order are in an array. So like every day there's an offset from the launch day, which gives me an index in that array. And that is the word. So you can just go and look up, and there's like enough words for about 5 years. So you can go and look up what the word is going to be tomorrow and the next day. I kind of don't worry too much about that because it's like, if you're doing a puzzle in the newspaper, you can turn the newspaper upside down and read the answers, right?
Like, if you're doing a crossword, the New York Times crossword, you could just Google New York Times crossword. Like, if you want to ruin the game for yourself, go right ahead. You know, that what's the reason? What's the purpose of doing that? You know,
do you guys get this a lot? People email me and they're like, I'm not sure if you're aware.
Oh yeah, dude,
you can use. Yeah, it's like I wrote the game. I know.
Yeah, I know
what's there. Thank you.
Oh my gosh,
I really appreciate it. But to your point, Wes, having the So when debugging the game locally, it's really useful to be able to see what the words are, obviously. Knowing what I know now, I probably would have maybe rot13'd the word list. Are you both familiar with that algorithm?
No. What is that?
It is you offset each character by 13 characters. The alphabet is 26 letters. Mm. So if you just add 13 to the char code, it scrambles it, but the method that you use to encode is also the method you use to decode. Mm-hmm. So you only need one function and it doesn't care, you know, which state it's in. And it's a quick way. Like, obviously you could memorize, you know, the A 13 letters away. I don't know. It's like M or N or something, but it's just a quick way of not having feel bad moments like this. Yeah. So I actually had to add that function for some of my analytics stuff because it was ruining people in New Zealand play way in advance of me, and then I was seeing events coming through that had the answer, but I needed to be checking analytics at that time because I was using it to like monitor errors, and so I added it so it didn't get ruined for me. Sorry, Wes, that you
here's a question. So do you play it every day? I thought, oh, he probably knows all the words, but you yourself don't even know the words. I don't want to ruin it for you if you've done it today.
No, I play it every morning. So part
That's
of the
so
game,
cool.
Like,
That's so
part
cool.
of the game, well, the goal of the game, as I said, was to build a game for my partner that she and I would like playing. So in order
That's
to do
so
that,
fun. I love it.
I had to random, what I did, we filtered, there were like 13,000 five-letter words in the English language. A bunch of them are like really bogus, like you've never heard of, and they just look like nonsense. So we actually put a fair amount of time in filtering those down to about 2,500. And then I basically randomized that list, didn't look at it, shoved it in the code. And so it means I can play every day. But a downside is I don't know what the word is going to be tomorrow. And I live in constant fear that some word has slipped through our filtering that people don't know, or it maybe has a connotation that I didn't anticipate. Or so that's like, that's moderately terrifying, but yeah.
So in one of my courses, we build a randomizer for store names. Mm-hmm. And every now and then you'll get one, like it's like outrageously drab wives or something like that. And somebody will screenshot it and get super mad or send me an email. I'm like, it's random. It's the computer, right? So you have to I kind of went through and took a few out. It's like, oh, possibly a bad combo. But yeah, you could, especially with the kids and their slang these days, you don't know, like the word of the day today is very popular in Canada. So I thought that was very, very popular. Wait, can we say it? Because it's by the time
when will this point go out for a while, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, yeah, go for it.
So the word of the day today is moist, which is our prime minister, when COVID was popular, he told people, please do not breathe moistly. Oh,
okay. You know, some people really, we talked about how some people really hate that word. I wonder if this one's going to be controversial.
It was blowing up on Twitter this morning, and I think for that reason. And I think it's interesting to me, I know why people, it has like connotations. I think there's something interesting about that word where what it describes is also how the word sounds when you say it, right? Moist.
It has this
quality. I'm sure there's some linguistic phenomenon there that like someone really smart will know what it means. But I think that's really interesting when a word either looks like or sounds in the way it conveys the thing. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, man. Let's take a quick break for one of our sponsors. That is Sanity. Sanity is the place where you put all the content for your website and for your application. So if you yourself wanted to make yourself a Wordle and you wanted to actually build out a back end for the thing because you wanted stats on that, you wanted to be able to see the upcoming words, you wanted to have a CMS for all of your Wordle words, you could put Sanity behind that. And they do a lot more than that. They have Sanity Studio, which is the whole CMS. You can create all your content types and relate them to each other. You could submit something and then somebody else could approve the word before you go out. Check it out for your next project. Go to sanity.io/syntax. That's going to get you double the free usage tier. Thank you, Sanity, for sponsoring. I'm curious, like you've obviously have had a couple hits mm-hmm. on the internet and you have like an art background. I wonder if that plays into it. But like, do you think that you have any, like, are you like dialed into human psychology or do you have any like personality traits that you think might be, are you constantly curious? Like, how do you come out with so many of these hits on the internet?
That's a good question. I think if I knew, I've made a bunch of things that haven't been hits actually as well. And that was something I've really wrestled with, right? Like if you have a hit and then the next thing you do isn't, it's like, what did I do wrong? Am I, and like where you get your validation from with those things. Like if people didn't like it, does that mean I'm no good? And I struggle with that stuff a lot. I will say I think of myself as a curious person. I think that's kind of why I like programming. It's like as deep as you want to go. You can keep on asking questions with computer stuff. And like, I think also a curiosity about humans. Like, I think it's easy with programming to get sucked into the technical stuff. But at the end of the day, almost all things are built in service of humans. And so thinking about people, like, and I think Silicon Valley really struggles with this, like they hire incredibly smart technical people, but understanding that it's a human, you know, it's a meat bag using this thing at the end, and like what are their emotions and compulsions and what's driving them. And unfortunately in Silicon Valley that stuff kind of gets skewed into you know manipulation, or like how can we take advantage of those things, you know, like through, you know, a bunch of attention grabbing stuff. And none of that, I really dislike that stuff. And so trying to believe in the good in people and, you know, treat people decently and have a curiosity has really helped me. But I don't purport to have any deep insights or anything like that. I'm just doing what is interesting to me and it's working for me. And I think I've struggled in the past where I've set out to make a hit, you know, I've set out to make a viral game and then my intentions are skewed and it becomes hard to answer questions because I'm kind of doing it for the wrong, or not the wrong, you know, it's fine if people want to do that stuff. But for me personally, it's about being authentic to who I am. And I think that limits me in some ways, right? Or, you know, in conventional ways, like I'm not going to make, you know, a ton of money in the Silicon Valley sense. Obviously, Wordle worked out really well for me in that regard. But in terms of the opportunities available to me, it's a little different than conventional things.
Yeah. I mean, you probably just have some sort of intuitive skill there that when you, well, you said you try to surface it or try to use it, it's not as, you're like avoiding that intuitive part of your brain and more or less trying to use like some sort of like calculative part of your brain instead. So, right. Yeah, I mean, props on the ability to make that kind of thing happen. Are you aware just how it's so funny this thing is like blown up into mainstream, but like, you know what? I was listening to a hockey podcast and they like made their own version of this game called Gordle about like hockey names where you have to guess hockey names in five guesses. Like, are you aware of how many permeations there are of this thing?
Yeah. Well, I hadn't heard of that one. That one's amazing. So I have a lot of thoughts here. So the satire clones, like, so firstly, because it's just client-side JavaScript, you can just download it. And what people have done is downloaded it and swapped out the word list, you know, different languages or things like that. What people often forget to do is remove the analytics ID. So what I'm seeing is, a big list of, I didn't write that one coming through, which, you know, I love the open web and like people playing with stuff like that. On the flip side, there are a bunch of people who've just cloned it and slapped ads on it.
Put it into the app store or any of that stuff. Yeah.
And truthfully, a lot of that sort of stuff was my motivation to sell it, really. Mm-hmm. I found it really draining. Like, I put this thing out there. I was giving it away for free. And to see... And, like, clearly I'm giving it away for free, so I don't have an expectation to make money from it. But something about seeing other people so shamelessly take what I had done...
Totally.
And use it for their own profit. And like, even though that was money I didn't want to be making, the fact that they were, I don't know, it feels not as, I wish I could just be like, that's fine, that's them. But something about it just made me, it just literally hurt me. Like, I just woke up feeling dreadful about that stuff. And so...
Just taking a thing.
Wes and I would both definitely feel the same way because we have our content, our free content that we make with the purpose of being free, stolen off of YouTube and then resold on Udemy or any of these other sites where people are literally ripping our stuff off and then putting it up on the market. So I personally very much understand that pain because it's like, it sucks to see somebody pay money for something that you have given or created for free and with the intention of it being for free.
Yeah, no, and I think it was very clear to me that I didn't want to do this as a business, right? Like, if I wanted Wordle to become my full-time job, I probably could have figured out a way to do it. I would have had to figure out how to generate revenue from it in some way. And I think there's some methods of doing that are aligned with my values, but I didn't want to do that. I've just started a new job. I'm really enjoying focusing on that. But because then I didn't want to make it a business, it made justifying spending time on all these other things really, really hard to do. Like, you know, paying a lawyer to like, you know, deal with copycats and seasons, you know, all that stuff just got really complicated and messy. And there were none of the things that I wanted to deal with when I set out to do it in the first place. And I think for some people who their goal is to make a business, right, or make an app that goes viral, I think they look at that decision and they don't really understand it. And maybe from if money was my only motivation, maybe I didn't make the best decision. But given that there were so many other factors for me personally that went in, and my personal stress was a really, like, and just my health was a really big part of that. So
we totally get that. Absolutely. I probably make a lot of the same decisions personally.
Because you see a lot of people get into that, and like before you know it, you are running a Wordle business and like trying to, you've got meetings with accountants and lawyers and like that's not, sometimes I find myself that, like, why did I spend my entire day having meetings with the professional services? I want to code, you know? And like, for me, it's very important to get back to the why I got into all of this.
Totally.
Let's talk about actually selling it, though. We're not going to pry too much.
Before we talk about selling it, if you were to sell Wordle, how would you write an invoice in FreshBooks?
I would go to FreshBooks and write an invoice and let them put turn credit card processing on. And
you'd pay the big old fee.
No, FreshBooks is a cloud accounting software for your business. We just talked about professional services. I recently added my accountant directly into my own FreshBooks. They allow you to do that for free. You don't have to pay extra for that. And it's great because they just go in and grab all your expenses, all of your invoices for the year, anything that you have in there, they can see it all real time. You don't have to say, here's the updated Excel file. The old one is not good anymore. It's all great. So check it out, freshbooks.com/syntax. You're going to get a 30-day unrestricted free trial. Thank you, FreshBooks, for sponsoring. All right. So let's talk about selling this thing. I'm just curious, the process to selling something like this and people approaching you. Because in my past, I used to have this daily deal aggregator. And when that thing blew up on me, and I had people in my inbox all day long, venture capitalists, people who wanted to buy it. And I was just kind of I'm 21. I don't know what to do with this, you know? Like what does that process even look like? I'm sure you had dozens of people, because even myself, I was like, why does this guy not have ads on it? I was just running the numbers. I was like, this guy could be making bank if you just to throw a couple ads.
He could be making
there,
what Wes?
Bank, huge.
Well, I know you and said. Then, I was hoping you'd do it the same.
Bank, bank. But obviously, we've talked about why you didn't do that. But what does it look like when they approached you?
Yeah, I mean, all great questions and things that I didn't know. And I still don't know, really. In the case of the New York Times, they emailed me and were like, hey, we're playing the game. Do you want to have a discussion around it? And as I mentioned, the New York Times word games in particular, play an important part in the origin story of Wordle. So I was very open to that conversation. There are some other gaming companies that reached out to me, or basically every big company reached out to me kind of. It's never, hey, we want to buy your thing. It's would you be open to having a discussion about, very open-ended. But I feel like I probably could have, there are other probably more lucrative, companies in terms of the sale out there. But going with a company that was aligned with my values and I think will be good stewards for the game was really, really important for me. There are a bunch of steps in the deal making process that I did not know existed. And I kind of stumbled through them. Were I to do it again, I might do some of them a bit differently. Or I think it's just one of those things you learn and it's kind of hard to figure out. But there's a point in the deal making where you kind of sign something that's non-binding, but kind of says, we're kind of getting serious about each other. I'm not going to look and solicit around and talk to other people. And what steps you want to take before then and after then, kind of, I think it becomes clear to you when you go through this process, when to go through those things. I am very, you may have gathered from the way I'm talking about this, I'm very not business savvy. It doesn't excite me or inspire me. And so I know some people really enjoy that. But yeah, for me, it was just an unfortunate byproduct of the thing I had to do to go through this process.
Oh, that's interesting. I was curious of what that looks like. Even now, I've got some tiny little websites that get some decent traffic. And every now and then you get somebody who's like, hey, I'd like to buy this site because it's got good traffic and the audiences overlaps. And you got to have phone calls and NDAs. And most of the time it doesn't pan out. And what a pain in the butt.
It takes time. And there are a bunch of questions that no one knows the answer to. What is this thing worth? Right? Mm-hmm. Each party's may think they know, but then it's a negotiation.
Yeah, it's intense. It's intense. That sounds an exciting, but also I'm sure you're feeling relieved at this point. I feel like it is.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest sense for me right now is relief. Well, I will share a fun fact is, as I mentioned before, this is a path on my personal domain, powerlanguage.co.uk / Wordle.
Yeah, what's the plan there?
Which if you're going to make a viral game, don't put it on a custom domain. Yeah. Don't put it on a path. So the agreement is that I'm going to keep powerlanguage.co.uk.
Wow.
They are going to have the path, which is a weird, you know, it's a weird, we had to figure out how that was going to work because there's no way I can give them complete ownership of the path, you know, while I retain the domain. And they were very understanding that the my portfolio site had, you know, value to me and I wanted to keep it, but it is highly irregular, I would say.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You'll have to put a Apache 4.0 whatever redirect in there. Make sure you don't goof it up.
Yeah. Thankfully, I think Cloudflare has like a page rule or like a redirect rule that I can add.
Yeah, you could do
but
that.
But there is, as part of the migration, we're going to add a bit of logic to make sure that people's, because it, as we mentioned, it's stored in local storage. Something I learned through doing this project.
Oh, it's domain specific.
It's per domain. So I didn't realize also www. And no www count as different domains. And I'm not redirecting. So you can play, if you go to without the www, it won't have your stats if you normally play on www.
Yeah.
I, you know, obviously a redirect and make one of them the canonical URL would be the correct path forward. I was so far in at that point, I didn't want to handle a migration from one local storage to the other. There and there are a bunch of things you can do there, but yeah, anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's, I specifically have had to do that in the past.
What did you do?
I ended up, so you set up a, you set up something on the one, I've done it cross domain, but you have to set up like a,
do you do the iframe hub
that, yeah, it's an iframe that sends it via,
you do like post message. Yeah.
And then you got to set up cores. Those websites are allowed to talk to each other and you got to sort of hot potato it from the one domain to another.
Yeah.
So you could definitely do that with the,
The other option I was looking at, which is way simpler, but fraught in different ways, was just like Base64 encoding the data because it's fairly consistent size, and then just doing a client-side redirect, sending that data along as a URL param. The only issue there is like, what if someone shares that URL, right? Like, we think about URLs a lot because we're developers, but I think for a lot of users, they're not, you know, one of the things that pains me about modern web development actually is the lack of aesthetics in URLs. Mm. You know, people just throw anything up there. I'm quite a purist. But anyway, so like imagine if you have your stats in a, encoded in a URL, you give it to your dad or something like that. They go and suddenly they have your stats.
Oh,
that would be a bit weird.
Yeah.
So there's just some like UX stuff. So the method you mentioned, Wes, I think is definitely the cleanest one. It's just a bit more technically involved and like depends what you have an appetite for. Yeah.
And it, even like New York Times might have some security in their, I'm forgetting all the names of everything right now, but like sometimes they have security policies on their content security policy.
Yeah.
That's what it is, where you can't request data from another domain, right? So you definitely have to be in some meetings for that one. That's interesting. So what is the New York Times? Are they gonna add more stuff to it? Is it gonna be like, I always thought like, well, can we have 6-letter words? Like how come it's 5-letter words?
Not,
you know,
and, not 5-minute abs, 4-minute abs.
You're an innovator, Wes. Yeah.
Can we have 6 words?
They should be
Hold
paying.
On,
you.
I gotta make 6-letter Wordle 6.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. There are some like things I would have liked to have done that I never. When it start taking off, it was like pushing changes to a. Entirely client-side website is a little fraught, right? Like some people leave a tab open on their phones or they have it installed on their home screen in a kind of PWA fashion.
Yep.
When those assets get refreshed, I don't actually know a lot of the time. You know, I can see that people are running, like I have like a hash of the JavaScript bundle embedded in the file, and I can see that there are people playing old versions. So things like changing the word list that needs to be consistent is a little fraught, because if I change the word list and then it's different from people, that's problematic. And so that kind of slowed down some of those problems, which I'm sure I could have tackled if I had an appetite to, just kind of slowed down development. So it's things like maybe an archive of the last week's games. So if you miss some, you can go back. Or the other thing that was getting a bit back-endy was like the concept of a leaderboard with your friends, not a global one, but just like you could add your friends. And then there's a bunch of interesting stuff you can do where you could show when friends have completed it for the day, so you know who you can talk to about it. Or maybe there's a winner's chat room, and once you win, you get put in a chat room with other people who know what the solution is, so you can discuss. But these are all like what if nice to haves, and I think add a level of complexity that maybe isn't worth it for what the game, you know, the game is so successful as it is already.
Yeah,
totally.
You know, it's all trade-offs.
The reason
right?
why it's so successful. What's your opener word?
I try and mix it up each day. Oh, it depends if I'm feeling
your opener
if I'm feeling pretty, you know, overwhelmed, I'll go to one of the go-tos. Irate high in the rotation at the moment. But if I'm like feeling carefree and, you know, I've got appetite for a bit of a challenge, I'll like throw something out there. Love a pilot. That's quite a good example. Ooh,
pilot.
There are some, there are some pretty good crunchy five letter words out there. What's your, do you have an opener?
I was doing irate for the longest time, and then I went on, I found a TikTok that somebody downloaded the word list and
did like some frequency analysis.
Yeah, and they said it was,
oh my gosh,
shoot, what was it?
I did not get this deep into it.
Scott, like, do you not have an opener?
Hello or whatever. I just write a word. Maybe it's because I'm dyslexic that I'm like, me and words are not great.
It's so frustrating to me this whole game. I just like, I don't know any words.
Yeah.
Later, as apparently the statistically most, your best one. But like, I use it and I suck at it. So
what's fascinating about the game is that I think it appeals to people on a bunch of different levels. Language is a universal thing. Everyone has to use language. So at the base level, even if you're not thinking about frequency algorithms, you can like play the game because you know which letters are likely to occur where, like starting with an X, probably it's probably not going to be a word starting with X. Like everyone knows that. What is interesting is that a bunch of technically minded people have really enjoyed digging into and writing algorithms. And they all come up with slightly different results, actually, because it is fairly subjective how you weight the different answers in different spots.
That's so fun. This is so neat.
Yeah, that's really cool. Is there anything else we didn't talk about that we should hit before we get into some sick picks?
Yeah, there is one thing that I really wanted to mention, and that is the concept of juice. Are you familiar with juice in a UI?
No. Juice in the UI. I'm familiar with juice in the movie Juice with Tupac.
The movie Juice. Yeah. So this is a little different. There is an excellent talk on YouTube called Juice It or Lose It. And it's basically about, and it's specific to games, but it applies to other UIs. And it's about how you give feedback to the player and how much the experience changes. And I knew about this stuff, but I never really practiced it. So for instance, in Wordle, you enter a word on the keyboard, you hit enter, the computer immediately knows what you letters you got right and what you got wrong. But when you play Wordle, what it does is the tiles flip over one by one. Mm. That animation takes less than a second, but I think it's a really nice, visually it's pleasing. And it also like teases out, you made a guess and the computer like slowly lets you know how you did. And I think a lot of developers, when they'll write something like this, they will just have the UI snap update and reflect the state that the computer knows about. And that's what I had done basically in everything I did previously. With Wordle, I took the time to like work, putting a little juice in there, this like flipping animation, and it makes the world of difference. And I was chatting to my friend about this, who's very experienced front-end developer at Reddit. And his observation was that things in life, in the real world, don't happen instantaneously. Like nothing goes from zero to one. No. Immediately.
Things pop in and out. Yeah, it'd be very surreal. Yeah.
And so, Bill, again, because like we talked about, it's humans that will be using your UI, making your UI behave in a way that feels human, feels natural, feels organic, just really helps people engage with it. And that was something that I, like I said, I'd heard about, but I didn't really fully understand until I did it. And I think it's played a large part in Wordle's success. They're not anything... It's very subtle, not anything amazing, but just like the little pop when the tile appears and that flipping animation, I think does so much.
Yeah, I did notice that. It all feels very nice and smooth and snappy. And like you said, it's very human in the UI interactions. And is that all just like CSS animations then?
Yeah, CSS. And I experimented, you know, like with the concept of like state machines with animations. Yep. I experimented with using data attributes to like indicate what state an element should be, and then used CSS selectors, which like targeted based on the attributes. Or at least I did that in one place in the code. I'm pretty sure I probably did it in another way in the code. But yeah, all using CSS is fairly simple. And it was, it was really fun to do. And web components, Shadow DOM encapsulation, amazing for stuff like this. Didn't have to worry about leaking styles or anything like that.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
Yeah, go back and listen. I think we did an episode on web components, Wes. Maybe I'll do a quick hunt for that and put it in the show notes if you're interested in learning a little bit more about those. There's a lot of really neat things in the web component space that is constantly evolving, considering how still fresh they are.
All right. Let's move into the next section of the podcast, which is sick picks. This is a section where we pick things that are sick. I'm not sure. Did you come prepared with a sick pick or not?
I do, but it's a little irregular. But I think you'll appreciate it.
We love a regular.
Yeah, we love a regular. Yeah.
Okay, so my sick pick. This is partially inspired by Wes's Instagram, which is amazing. His stories are all like just doing dad stuff.
Yeah.
It's a lot of DIY focus. But anyway, it is Tupperware. It's a life hack for Tupperware. I buy the same piece of Tupperware, multiples of exactly the same piece of Tupperware. And that means you are never trying to match a lid to a base because they're all identical. It no longer matters. And that is my sick pick.
Oh, man. I often tell my wife how, like, I'm not one for government, but if there's anything the government should standardize, it's Tupperware and socks.
Tupperware and socks.
Too many different kinds. Oh man, I totally agree. My problem is that we standardize on new Tupperware like twice every 2 years. So and then you end up with like random pieces. So what do you use then?
Yeah. IKEA makes one that's been fairly consistent, and so I just buy it. That's the one I buy. It's glass, high quality. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really does the job.
We do the same with the Costco, whatever the Costco glass one is. We've standardized on that, but. I definitely agree. I'm going to go irregular with my sick pick as well, then, since we have Tupperware as number one. My sick pick is going to be a giant tub of Epsom salt. I found out that you can buy a 1 gallon tub of Epsom salt on Amazon for $27, and it's huge. It's a massive tub of Epsom salt, and you know I love taking an Epsom salt bath, getting nice and warm and cozy in there. So yeah, this is a giant tub. The one I got is Epsom salt plus eucalyptus because you got to love eucalyptus as a scent, and it's huge. It's a gallon. It's a big old tub. So a tub of Epsom salt. That's my sick pick.
I'm gonna sick pick I sick picked the Instant Pot air fryer lid, and I told you that the only downside was it was too small. So we got the Instant Vortex Plus 6-in-1, and this thing is freaking awesome. Like I was so skeptical on air fryers, and we finally got into it, and like we use it. Like probably every day, I would say, and just for some part of our meal. And it's amazing for making vegetables and chicken. And of course, like I always thought it was like, oh yeah, you're just eating chicken fingers every day. Like that's why people like air fryers, but it's so much better than that. So big check out the Instant Vortex Plus. That's the one we landed on. I went through the America's Test Kitchen and they tested like 100 of them and they said, this is the best one. And I trust everything they say. They're like wire cutter for kitchen gadgets.
Sick. All right. Shameless plugs. Josh, do you have anything to plug?
Powerlanguage.co.uk/wordle.
Perfect. Yes.
Check it out if you haven't heard about it.
Yeah. It, honestly, if you have not, as a developer, I mean, this is such a cool experiment or just a cool thing to even just try and feel like, oh yeah, this is the kind of stuff that we can do. You have so much freedom in the world to build something like this. And all you got to do is just try it. Who cares? Go for it. Love it. I'm going to shamelessly plug leveluptutorials.com. We have a new course out this month on Keystone, and it's on Keystone in itself. It's from Amy Dutton, who is
awesome.
Her style, her personality, her whole vibe is infectious. She's super cool. She's a great instructor, and she's just exciting to listen to watch. So if you want to learn Keystone JS, head on over to leveluptutorials.com. You can sign up to become a pro and get access to a new course every month, or you can just straight up buy it outright. So check it out. Thank you.
I'm going to shamelessly plug all my courses, westboss.com/courses. You can learn all you need to learn about JavaScript and HTML and CSS there, westboss.com/courses. A bunch of free ones there as well. All right.
Sick.
Thank you, Josh, so much for coming on.
Yeah.
That was super interesting. I'm very curious. I bet that this is going to be one of our most highly, like my whole family is like, I need to listen to that podcast. So it'd be kind of interesting to see how many people do listen to this one.
Amazing.
If you are new to this podcast, make sure you subscribe in your podcast player. And thanks again.
Thank you. Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.